Welcome to News Data's Energy West, a podcast about the energy industry today and where it's going tomorrow.
Hello, I'm Dan Catchpole, reporter with News Data's Clearing Up. And today I sit down with my colleague, Casey Mahaffey, who covers fish and the Northwest hydropower system for Clearing Up. The Northwest contains as much as one-third of the country's hydropower generation capacity and produces more than half of the country's hydropower generation, according to the Energy Information Agency. You can't talk about hydropower in the Northwest without talking about fish, specifically salmon. Casey's here today to get us up to speed on the latest developments in fish mitigation affecting how the hydropower system in the Northwest operates, and some upcoming developments in the Columbia River Treaty that Canada and the United States are renegotiating. We also talk about this year's snowpack. April 1st traditionally marks when snowpack stops accumulating and starts melting. This year, it looks to be another low water year for the Northwest hydropower system. Hey, Casey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. I'm really glad to have you on here. We've been talking about doing this for a while. I'm glad we finally synced up and made this happen.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Casey, you're based in Central Washington. You are one of the, I like you. We work together, but in all honesty, I got to say, you are one of the most well-informed people about what is happening in the Columbia Basin with the water system, what this means for hydropower, and fish mitigation and generally really depressing topics. When you took this job, I have to ask, did you know that you would be writing dismal headline after headline about salmon runs? And
no, I knew salmon were in serious trouble. I knew very little though about like the Lower Snake River dams. I knew very little about, I knew a lot about snowpack and all of that. I mean, I live in it, and we see the fluctuation from year to year, and I certainly knew about climate change, but no, I've learned so much in the last 6 years. It's really nice to be able to do a deep dive instead of, how they do a inch deep and a mile wide when you're let at a daily newspaper. So no, I had no idea it'd be like this.
Well, as two former newspaper reporters, I'm sure we would defend the inch deep, mile wide, but it's a reality. They have a different role from what we do here. And God bless them.
Yeah, it's important.
And God bless everybody, as Tiny Tim said. But so you mentioned snowpack. So speaking of that, April 1st marks generally when we transition from storing snow to snow melt.
Yes.
So first of all, last year we had kind of a low water year. It was kind of a weird year at the beginning, but overall, low water year. What can we expect? What are we having so far? And what does this look like for the runoff?
Yeah. And so last year we were fortunate because we had a very cold spring. And so that kind of made their forecast come out a little bit better than what it was predicted. But right now they're looking at some parts of the Snake River. Actually, they had above average precipitation, but most of the rest of the Columbia Basin had lower than average precipitation. And then we've already had a week, I don't know how warm it was over there, but in March of 70 degree weather. So we've already had a bit of snow runoff in March. And so right now they're predicting the volume of water that's going to flow through Bonneville Dam from 1st of April through the end of September will be about 83% of average. And of course, I mean, the weather always can change that, just like it did last year. We had cold weather, so the snowpack preserved itself. But they use historical precipitation amounts and historical temperatures in their model. So by this time of year, they're generally, pretty close to what we're going to see. So 83% doesn't sound all that bad, but it's not very good. And it could be worse. It'll just depends on what the, precipitation happens between, throughout the summer And then especially, you know, April is one of our precipitation months. But after that, you know, and even June, but after July, August, and even September are pretty low precip. So I guess Snake River is looking at about 89% of average at Lower Granite Dam. And again, this year, it's the Canadian snowpack that's really low, the Upper Columbia. And so that brings, you know, somewhere between half and 60 to 70% of our water in the Columbia Basin. So, it's not looking great.
Like you said, 83%, you know, in school, that was a B, right?
Yeah. But,
there's a big difference between 83% and 100% or, you know, 110. You can always get, unlike school, well, I don't know, maybe nowadays, the snowpack can be, you can get better than an A+.
Yes, right. That's right.
With these projections, you mentioned historic data. What do we, do you think we adequately account for changing climate conditions in the projections for the water year?
That's an interesting question. They do two things when they do their water supply. They do a briefing every month. The figures I just gave you, the modeling is based on the last, I think, 75 years. So back to 1949. But there were some big water years in there, and we had some drought years in there. And then they also do 30-year average, percent of 30-year average. So so they do it two different ways to try to get a capture of more recent years. I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. I mean, they have models that for climate change, but they go all over the place. You know, some of them showed the Northwest would have more precipitation, but I don't think they really know what's going to happen. Of course, they don't know what's going to happen, but I think they're doing the best they can. And it's pretty sophisticated what they're doing, but I think it's a really hard job to say, you know, to capture what climate change is going to do here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and we need Marty McFly and his DeLorean to really have an accurate view. But yeah, no, absolutely true that these, we are trying to project very complex, I mean, things that are even more complex than we understand. But that doesn't mean that we can still, that is, we're not denigrating or dismissing the work that they do. That, you know, you still have to come up with the best estimates for what's coming. Again, just want to say we're not dismissing anything by making that objective statement observation about this is really hard stuff, and they're doing incredibly complex modeling. You know, we should say for listeners who are not as saturated in this as we are, what is the group that is does these monthly updates?
Okay, so there's the Northwest River Forecast Center, and that is a NOAA. So that's, you know, like what NOAA is, the National Weather Service. And they have a forecast center that just predicts, you know, the Columbia Basin and then Western Washington and Western Oregon. That's the, and then they monthly have, if you just Google search Northwest River Forecast Center, they have a whole website and all kinds of amazing tools on that to, you know, you can look at snowpack and history of precipitation and history of temperature.
It's a little overwhelming sometimes.
It's very
unless
overwhelming.
You're really versed in it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier about the lower snowpack in Canada. I want to transition here to something that you're writing about, update on the Columbia River Treaty, how the water in the Columbia Basin is used, because this watershed crosses the border. It's both Canada and the U.S. depending on this water. Where are we with the Columbia River Treaty? This has been going on for several years. Where are we at now?
Yeah. So now is 2024. And in September, we will, you know, hit the 60-year mark. And there's an automatic provision that provision in the treaty for flood control that expires, which doesn't mean Canada won't store water for us for flood control. But it goes to a whole different you know, method of doing that. We can't just say we need you to store this much water. We just need to do a called upon thing, and they get to kind of set more prices on how to do that. But everybody's hoping we don't get there. And by everybody, I hope I mean Canada too, because it sounds like from listening to their that they feel as rushed as we do to get this done by September. So there is a big push. No one can really talk about the specifics of what's being negotiated because it's a negotiation. So, but there are signs they're getting close. You know, it's being discussed at high level meetings. I think in the middle of February, I did a brief that the Secretary of State for the U.S., Antony Blinken, met with the Canadian Foreign Minister, Melanie Jolie, in Washington, D.C., and they were discussing the treaty. So that was kind of the topic of their discussion. So that was interesting to see it at that top level. And then on Friday, I was at the Chelan PUD had a celebration for the 20-year signing of their habitat conservation plan, which I'll be writing about this week. And Senator Maria Cantwell was there as one of the speakers. And so I got a chance to chat with her a little bit before the event and asked her about kind of the many challenges that hydropower in the Northwest is facing, including, you know, climate change, the reduction of snowpack, higher spill levels, and the, you know, the strong dam removal efforts, and the Columbia River Treaty. And she kind of said that she and Senator Risch from Idaho and Senator John Tester from Montana are laser focused on getting this done, the Columbia River Treaty. She said, you know, she can't share the details of the treaty, but they are apparently talking to our utilities, our farmers, businesses, and trying to rectify whatever differences remain. So, and she also talked about it during the speech at the event. She and Jen was applauded when she said, we need more cooperation from the Canadians on how we manage the river on this side. So, I'm feeling like that is probably a good sign that they're so tuned in to getting this done.
Now, there's the flood control. What else is at play with the Columbia River Treaty? That's, you know, negotiations have been going on for a few years now in anticipation of that date. But yes. Are there other provisions that really influence the hydropower system in the Northwest that are in play?
Oh, yes. So the Columbia River Treaty Power Group, they lobby basically our congressional delegation and try to make sure that the issues of hydropower stay in focus. And basically, the power group's main push is to rebalance what's known as the Canadian entitlement. So when the treaty was formed 60 years ago, you know, in order to give something back to the Canadians for building these huge storage dams, you know, and flooding a whole bunch of land and displacing a lot of people and, you know, basically pissing a lot of people off, they, you know, got back. They get basically half of the power that can be generated in the U.S. as a result of the storage dams that were built. So if they, you know, if they save a bunch of water and then let it go when we can generate hydropower, then they get half of the power then back. And so I guess it made sense at the time, but, you know, a lot has changed in the last 60 years. The power group says that translates to about $300 million a year in lost value for hydropower. And a lot of the reason that it's changed is that it doesn't account for any water that we use, you know, for the ecosystem, for fish. And so water that spilled, you know, that could have generated power, but it's not generating power. But still, by the provisions of the treaty, you know, Canada gets what could have been generated. And so that's a big, you know, big contention that that hydropower wants. And I think, you know, just listening to Maria Cantwell, it sounds like they also kind of want some assurances on how much water they'll store for us. And it's not just for us, because the Canadian side also has hydroelectric power and they also need the power. So the two provisions of the treaty originally were hydropower and flood control, and fish were left out of it, you know, and tribes weren't even consulted. And so it was a very, very different time. And, you know, now there are tribes, you know, not sitting at the table in the U.S., but they are sitting at the table in the in Canada, and they're being briefed regularly on the U.S. side. So, so it's a very different time, and I think the ecosystem function is going to be a big part of what we see come out of this that looks different from what we have today.
And just to go back to what you mentioned a little bit ago, that $300 million, that's for hydropower in the United States, correct?
That is overall. For hydropower that the United States generates and generates and gives back to Canada, either as power or as in the value, you know, Canada can sell it. Basically, they're allowed to sell what we give back to them. And that was, you know, part of it was to ensure that they were able to pay for the cost of building those dams. But that's long been paid for, apparently. And now it's all it just goes to the Canadian government, and they can sell it and subsidize their own power, or I'm not sure what they use it for. I should know that.
I mean, that's so. Yeah, it's BC Hydro that owns those, which markets correct?
Yes, it's BC Hydro, I think.
And then, so they market the excess through PowerX, which is a major player in the Western power market.
Right. And so, yeah, and so that $300 million a year is about what they get from the. And this is not just federal dams. It's also the PDs in the main stem because they benefit as well.
Chelan, Grant, Douglas, public utility districts that are major wholesale power sellers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now, just the last thing I wanted to get a quick update here on is where we're at with spill commitments. And do you see any, first of all, can you just real succinctly, for listeners who aren't familiar with the ongoing saga of the Columbia River, just how it's run, the operational kind of parameters for maintaining or running this huge electric hydropower system, and you know, around the parameters of fish and wildlife mitigation. Where do you see any updates coming in this long-running legal fight over how to prioritize those and how they can coexist?
Right. So not much has come out really since December when they filed with the court and the judge has since approved the stay agreement. And the stay basically just says we're going to put this on hold while we try to work through these issues. But filed with those was a whole list of government commitments. And then, you know, in addition to that, there was the Columbia Basin Restoration Initiatives, which was developed by four tribes in the states of Washington and Oregon. And really, it lays out a whole set of things. I mean, it's not just hydropower operations, but, habitat work and, but I think, for a lot of our readers, the interesting part is kind of the hydropower operations and what's happening with those. And
you can't talk about hydropower in the Northwest without talking about fish.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And so, I mean, a lot of this agreement, a lot of the attention has been focused on the Lower Snake River dams, and this is a pathway to removing them. And it may or may not be. I think it's on stay right now. And so we won't know until either this whole thing doesn't work and they decide to, cut and run, or else it works its way through. And if it works its way through, it's going to be, at least 5 years, probably 10. So it's just too far out with the energy industry as mobile or as in flux as it is now. Who knows what it's going to be like in 10 years? That's just a long time to be looking ahead. So as far as the Snake River dams, I would not speculate on what's going to happen with those. But the hydropower operations, I think the agreement has made those operations stable, and spill will be higher than it's ever been. But BPA gets the month of August to kind of compensate for it, so they're going to reduce their what they used to have for summer flow in the month of August, and they've shown the last 2 years that doing that gives them back. They haven't had as the whole month of August, but just even those last 2 weeks gives them a lot more valuable energy because it's when people need energy for air conditioning and, you know, the water levels are already pretty low. So, yeah, personally, I think it's one of the things that kind of has been overlooked in terms of the fish as well, because when you change the operations every year, you want to study whether spill is working or what's working. And to me, if you change it every year, that's one of the few things you can control. If you're going to try to compare it to another year, there's nothing to compare it to because you haven't ever done those operations before. So, so I guess having a stable operation, which they can change, but they won't be drastically changing it, is my understanding. It, like, they won't be changing it from 120% to 125% or.
For listeners who aren't familiar, and maybe myself a little bit, what is that 120%?
They just spill until the total dissolved gas in the river measures 120 or 125%. So spill increases the amount of dissolved oxygen in the water, which is, if you go too high, it's hard on fish. But the dams in the Columbia are deep enough that generally the fish can go deeper. They're not going to swim and say, oh, this isn't bothering us at all. They're going to try to swim away from it. And they can go deeper and just get away from the, you know, the horrible total dissolved gas if there's a lot. But yeah, it's the higher levels that, you know, 125% is more than even the states would allow before this agreement came through. So now they're spilling more than ever before, and it'll just be a regime that they can compare from year to year and see what works, I think. So,
well, it's a lot to keep track of. Thank you very much for catching us up to date with all the changes that have been going on. These are all slow moving things, but it does feel like we've had a lot of big developments coming and, you know, coming. Having come in the recent past and coming in the near future. So
yes,
and some exciting time. As always, for people who want to read more, go check out Casey's work. Like I said, she's one of the foremost experts in this area. And I always appreciate your putting a light on this and making sense of it for us.
Well, Dan, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, Casey, take care. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, you too. Bye, Dan.